Today's gospel is taken from the 16th chapter of Matthew. From that time on, Jesus began to show his disciples that he must go to Jerusalem and undergo great suffering at the hands of the elders and chief priests and scribes, and be killed, and on the third day be raised. And Peter took him aside and began to rebuke him, saying, "God forbid it, Lord. This must never happen to you." But he turned and said to Peter, "Get behind me, Satan. You are a stumbling block to me, for you are setting your mind not on divine things, but on human things." Then Jesus told his disciples, "If any want to become my followers, let them deny themselves and take up their cross and follow me. For those who want to save their life will lose it, and those who lose their life for my sake will find it. For what will it profit them if they gain the whole world but forfeit their life? Or what will they give in return for their life? For the Son of Man is to come with his angels in the glory of his Father, and then he will repay everyone for what has been done. Truly I tell you, there are some standing here who will not taste death before they see the Son of Man coming in his kingdom." This is the gospel of the Lord. Thanks be to God. Please be seated. I have an apple in here too, just so you know. I just wanted to share that because... Well, today feels like a pulpit day, so it's a pulpit day. Kids are intense. That's awesome. Well, when you get we have a pastor text study. And so that means that myself or Beth or both of us, when we can, go to this place and we review the readings and look at the readings. Whether you're preaching or not, it's just a good Bible study to go to and to think through the readings. So, and we have it here at 9 o'clock on Wednesdays. And it used to be at Good Shepherd. Now it's moved to here. So we're in, we get a room full of pastors, and we have some interns, so pastors who will be pastors eventually, people who will be pastors. You know, pastors, everybody thinks they know it all. So when you get to a text like this one, which I'm talking about now, the gospel text, I'm not talking about Paul's suggested imperatival freedoms, which I'll get at for a second what that means, but I'm talking about the Matthew text and about taking up your cross. If any want to become my followers, let them deny themselves and take up their cross and follow me. What does that mean? That was the question of the day. What does that mean? Now, you know, a lot of times when Jesus says stuff, people spend thousands of years thinking, what does that mean? And I think this is one of those big, thick ones. If any want to become my followers, let them deny themselves, take up their cross, and follow me. What does it mean, and how is it true? Those are the questions. I think those are the questions for any text that we have and for our Bible. What does it mean, and how is it true? So, I had that shirt out there, and I am wearing that shirt today because I thought part of what it means for me personally is... Unlike Pastor Beth, who was talking about supers, well, not unlike her, but she was talking about supers last year and superheroes, I don't think there are superheroes. And I don't think, at least this text, when I read it, if any want to become my followers, let them deny themselves, take up their cross, and follow me. I don't think that means to be a superhero. So, a lot of times in superheroes, you have a hidden identity. He could not possibly be a super... Well, if you know me, yeah, there's no way. I'm just Eric. Yeah. But, you know, could I be a superhero? Well, let me take off my glasses and take off my shirt. And nope, I'm just Eric who's got the shirt that says, "God's work, our hands," which I happen to have on at the text study. And my thought about that was, at the text study, was... This is the struggle. It's not the God's work part. I think we all get that. We can all in some way figure out what it means and how it's true that Jesus came. That Jesus came and was among us. And in God's, I mean in Matthew's gospel, Jesus is Emmanuel, God with us. So God is doing things with us through Jesus, and we see that through his life. Whatever I'm doing with you, whatever we do with each other, that's what Jesus did with people. That's how Jesus lived. So we can get that part. God works through Jesus. What did Jesus tell us to do? Bottom line, a lot of things, including take up your cross. But the bottom line, I think, is love God, love your neighbor. He bottom lined that in another place and several times. And show mercy. I don't desire sacrifice. Mercy. And then he said, like in the Samaritan story, that's an example. What did he do? He showed mercy. That's what I'm talking about, Jesus said. So, if any want to become my followers, let them deny themselves and take up their cross and follow me. What does that mean? We know what it meant for Jesus. Because in that first part where Jesus said, I'm going to do this. I'm going to go to Jerusalem and it's not going to turn out well. I'm going to keep showing love. I'm going to keep saying the kingdom has come. Repent, that is, turn around. Turn around and love. It's God's works, but it's your hands. Love. Show mercy. Forgive. That's the... If you need suggestions, these are Paul's suggested imperatival freedoms. I just was trying to use imperative in kind of a fancy way. I don't even know if that's a word. And if you English teachers, I'm sorry. Imperatival may or may not be officially a word. But these are imperatives. When rejoice in hope. That's an imperative. Do that. And all these things. Let love be genuine. Hate what is good. Hold fast to what is good. Love one another with mutual affection. Outdo one another in showing honor. Do not lag in zeal. Be ardent in spirit. Serve the Lord. Rejoice in hope. Be patient in suffering. Persevere in prayer. Contribute to the needs of the saints. Extend hospitality to the strangers. If you're not sure how to love, I just gave you a dozen things to think about. That's just what Paul suggests. Those are just some of the suggestions of the freedom of love. Because that's God's work. Through Jesus, God gives us the freedom to love God and to love our neighbor and to show mercy. So those are some of the ways. So what's the significance then of Jesus? Well, here's a big old quote, which I lost. So, and the cacophony of the kids, I lost the quote. So you're not going to hear it. So we'll... What is this cross thing? That's the essence of the question, the cross. Are we called to suffer? That's a big question. Are we called to suffer? In the text study, it was a mixed answer. Some said yes. Yes. Loving is sacrifice. And it is. If you've been a parent or a grandparent, or if you cared in a deep way for a partner in life, or even if you have a pet. People love their pets. We love our dogs and our cats. Well, our one cat, maybe not. Well, no, we do. But our cat went in last night, opened up the glass drawer, got in there, pulled out a sack with a half a bagel. Pulled it out onto the ground and was going to eat it or give it to the dogs. I mean, that's a crazy cat move. But anyway, it's hard to love when... But yeah, so... But are we called to suffer? Sacrificial love. I think that's part of it, definitely. When Jesus says, take up your cross, I honestly don't, because you have to decide, was he literal? Did he really mean follow me to Jerusalem and be crucified the way that I am and will be crucified and die with me? Well, it could be, because sometimes love is quite sacrificial. And if you loved, you know that. And if you've received love, you know that. There is that quality. But is Jesus calling us to suffer just straight outright? Is that part of the program? Well, it's just part, I believe, it's just part of how it is. That's what Jesus says in that first part of the saying. I'm going to do all this, and I'm going to go and be killed. That's a natural consequence of when you love people. And when you set up a program of love, a lot of people who maybe like things the way they are and don't want that kind of love will shut you down and maybe crucify you. So if you've ever been involved in a program of love, let's say a church. A church that tries to go into the community in love. Well, some churches get pretty excited about it. And some churches in our society might even get crucified for trying to love. Now, I was looking at the U.S. News and World Report magazine in 1985, which is the last time they did it. They made this survey of the 30 different things influence, institutional influences. In 1985, religious communities was number 24 on the list of 30. And that was the last year they did in 85. That was 30 years ago. I bet you now it's probably 30 or 29. I don't know what would be less influential than religious institutions, but our country has grown to not think about churches as much anymore, religious institutions. So when we do things, and even wonderful St. Mark's, when we do things like have a community garden and get involved with a school and go across the world to make a difference, whatever it is we do, when we do those big things, people start paying attention, start wondering, start thinking, what's this love thing they're doing? It can change the world. And I think that's what Jesus was after. If any want to become my followers, let them deny themselves and take up their cross and follow me. What does taking up the cross mean for you? That's a wonderful cross. I look at that cross all the time. The Lamb who was slain has begun a new reign. We used to say in the setting 2 of the LBW. Sing that. Something like that. Haven't done it for a while. Maybe we need to do that. But there's that cross. You might all be, some of you, how many are wearing a cross right now? Many of you? Yep. Yep. My daughter got a beautiful set of cowboy boots because we went to Texas, and that's where my birth family lives. And when you live in Texas, you wear boots. That's just how it is. And it has, they're beautiful boots with crosses. It's beautiful. And crosses in Jesus' time was a horrible, horrible thing. But for our time now, it can be a powerful, powerful, hopeful thing. In the time of Jesus, crucifixion was, we hear of beheadings. Crucifixion is worse. One commentator said it's like this. During the time when there were slaves in the South and other places in the 1800s, they would, one of the things they would do to make it clear who's in control and give a sense of impotence, that's his word, for everyone else who was not in control, is they would whip children. And they would whip children in front of the parents. And that was a way to say that we're in control and you're not, and that's how it is. Get used to it. Because that's how it is. And that's the same way with crucifixion in the Roman times. We're going to crucify who we want, and they're the troublemakers, and it looks like this Jesus who talks about love and whatever, he's rabble-rousing a lot of people, and we're going to crucify him, and we're going to make it public and clear, and anyone else who's involved with him, get in line because you're next, and there's nothing you can do about it. Crucifixion was horrible. And yet, in God's work, it becomes a sign of hope. I ran 20 miles on Tuesday because I'm training for a marathon. 20 miles is a long ways, just in case you don't know that. Just to make that very clear, 20 miles is a long way. I still have some cuts on my feet from that. But as we're running, and we started at 5 o'clock, and it took 5.5 hours. So we came home running in the dark. And at one point in the and. You know, there's always stories about when you're running and do things like this where your body is extended, you kind of start to, certain things flow, endorphins flow, and you get these feelings. So the sky opened up, and there's a star, and a star, and a star, and a star. And it was a cross in the sky for me. as I was running. And I told my running partner, who lives in Aberdeen and is Catholic, I said, look at that cross in the sky. And he saw it. And it gave me hope. And I said to my, and I started to cry because that was the endorphins were talking. Because I was doing this thing that I, you know, 3 years ago I thought I could never run more than a mile. And I'm going to run a marathon on October 5th. I mean, I'm excited about that. But it was hopeful. A cross, four stars made a cross for me and gave me hope. And all I thought as I was running was, wherever there's a cross, there's hope. Even though the cross means crucifixion in Jesus' time, because of God's work, wherever there's a cross, there's hope. There was an article in the Lutheran from our big bishop, Elizabeth Eaton. And here's what she describes about the cross. A pastor in the synod also served as a chaplain to the fire department on September 11th. The pastor saw the first plane hit and ran to the site. When he arrived, the firefighters were putting on their gear. The pastor gathered them together, marked the cross of their marked the cross on their foreheads with oil, and prayed. Then the firefighters ran into the building. The people who survived said they could see the crosses shining on the firefighters' foreheads. The firefighters were transfigured. In that great darkness and suffering, the light of Christ appeared. What I would suggest is, whatever you think taking up the cross means, and however that God's work part means for you, however that means for you, whatever that means for you, however that truth looks for you, for many of us, it's about hope. And it's about freedom to love in the way that Jesus loved. And so that's why I wear this shirt. Partly, like I said in the text study, when I said this shirt is kind of hard for me, because the shirt I used to wear in Aberdeen was Grace Happens. That was on my back. So I always knew Grace Happens, which is my bottom line God thing. Grace Happens. So that helps me through the day. But this, our work, that's the hard part. Our work, what does that mean? That's the struggle. And I told the text study, I have five of these shirts from last year, so that's why I wear them, because I got five of them. They were $8 each, and I have five of them. They're cool shirts. So what does take up the cross mean? Well, what I would suggest, and I think sometimes, I'll just speak for pastors. Sometimes pastors in a text study overthink things. What I would suggest, at least for us, for some of you, well, definitely for all of you, especially if you were here last year, we got 3,300 pounds of food last year on September 7th, which is God's Work, Our Hands Sunday. And that's sweat, by the way. I'm sweating because it's warm. I'm still warm. So what I would suggest is, this year, we're going to do it again next Sunday. We're going to collect whatever food we have, and you can do it during the week. I put the table out there in the way so that it would remind you. Instead of a can or two, get a box of food. Because I think taking up your cross is quite simple. It doesn't mean plant your cross and be crucified, although it might mean that. But it means take up whatever you think is part of your life and go and love. So this week, this is how I think some of you might want to love. Take some boxes of food and put them on that table. And not only for yourself, but go with a friend. I've got two or three friends in mind this week that we're going to be the, if we're talking about superheroes, the Justice League of St. Mark. I'll be wearing this shirt, and we'll go and we'll each get a box or three or ten of food and bring it here. Because that's what it means to take up your cross and follow Jesus. Because it's God's work in our hands. Take up your cross might be as simple as getting a box of food and giving it to someone who needs it. That's what that means. Take up your cross. Follow me. Get your box. Amen.